Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Congresswoman Susan Davis, a Democrat whose 53rd congressional district now represents much of East County as well as San Diego. Congresswoman, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's good to be with you as always.
Congresswoman Davis has a long history of serving her community. She is the past president of the San Diego Unified School Board District Board. She has served as a social worker and as an elected member of the California State Assembly before winning her current seat in Congress. Assignments there include the House Armed Services Committee and the Education and Labor Committee. And now she's running for re-election against Larry Wilsk, a Republican and a Navy SEAL, who we've also invited in a spirit of fairness to also be interviewed, and we're hoping to have him on the show later this week. Congresswoman, let's start by asking you to tell us about what you consider to be your most important accomplishments in Congress and why you believe voters should re-elect you.
Thank you, Miriam. My goal has always been to be an effective bipartisan consensus builder in the Congress, to work with my colleagues to understand how we can develop these consensus around issues. And my focus has really been on the economy, because I know that if we don't expand the economy and everybody feels that they're a part of it, then we all lose. My placement on the Armed Services Committee and also on the Education Committee has given me a leadership post.
Right. You're a ranking member on the, is it Armed Services Committee?
On Armed Services, I'm the ranking member of the Personnel Committee. And of course, that committee is charged with taking care of the men and women who serve our country. And there couldn't be more a rewarding and, I think, a consequential position to have than on that committee.
Especially when you represent the San Diego region, which has so many military families and veterans.
Yes, exactly. And when I went to Congress and I had a chance to think about where would I really like to serve, where would I like to put the bulk of my time as a member of Congress, the Armed Services Committee was my choice, and along with the Education and the Workforce Committee, because I see those as two areas in which communities really can't be successful unless they are addressing the concerns of our security, of course. And we do that through our military. And the military plays, of course, a big role in keeping all of us safe and in Homeland Security as well as in San Diego.
Absolutely. Do you have any specific goals if you are reelected for the next term?
I was very influential in bringing the ports of entry changes to San Ysidro so that commerce flows at our border. We know that our economy can be a lot stronger if people do not have to wait long, long hours when they're working in this region. And we have many, many people who take that commute on a daily basis. We know that jobs would be created if we can loosen up that gridlock that we have at the ports of entry as well. So that was a very important accomplishment. And I was able to bring in all of the members of the San Diego delegation to be supportive of that. And we are moving forward. Even now as we speak, the traffic is less mm-hmm. than it was before this was completed. And we're still working on it, and we still have another phase to go, but I will focus on that. The other piece of accomplishment, particularly in terms of the economy and the future of San Diego, has to do with being certain that we fund the National Institute of Health here in the San Diego for the national economy, but also for San Diego. We're very fortunate. We have a tremendous technology and health innovation hub in San Diego.
Right.
And we get, actually, per capita, the greater number of NIH grants that come through at the federal government. And those grants support our young people, they support our scientists, they support our universities, they create this amazing synergy that everybody talks about that really creates jobs here in the region.
Yeah, that is an area where we've seen some differing views among the parties in Congress, where there's been efforts to cut the NIH funding, and I think we're seeing some of the impacts of that perhaps with the Ebola crisis right now. What, in your view, needs to be done to address the Ebola crisis?
I think we actually have to be certain that people who need care get the appropriate care. And when you think about mm-hmm. the fact that we actually have insured so many more people under the Affordable Care Act now, that's a good thing. The Wow. thought that we would have a pandemic in our country without people feeling confident and feeling that they could go to a doctor, even if they're not sure about what's going on.
Good point.
That's very important. We certainly know that we will have sufficient medical assistance here in the San Diego region. As we speak today, we know that there have been concerns and scares, and there will mm-hmm. be some of those. And I think we have to react as quickly as possible.
What about the research end of it for things like funding research into finding treatments, perhaps cures, and a vaccine?
Well, the most amazing thing is one of the vaccines that's been looked to the most is a San Diego developed vaccine. Mm-hmm. We have our companies, and you know, they start out as small companies. Sometimes right. they start out as research at the universities that develop into larger companies. Sometimes they're bought by larger companies, but it really is that innovation hub that has been so supportive of medical science, and we need to keep that going. Without the NIH grants, we are looking at now, within the budget that we hope to pass, $32 billion towards the NIH. It could even be higher, because what we have to be aware of is that other countries are not, you know, staying in one place on, right. on this research end. In fact, we know that there are many countries that are moving forward. They have far more help and support and resources from the government. We rely a lot on our local economy, on private business to do that, and that's fine. We want them to do that. We want even some small companies that are kind of niche companies that are looking for cures to more rare diseases to be involved in this, and they are today. But the NIH has really been the backbone, the foundation of how people move forward and develop many, many of these new cures. And I think as a country, we need to be concerned about this. Some of my colleagues, whenever we talk about increasing funding, they want to pay for it out of some other way. But the reality is this is, you know, it's foundational. Mm-hmm. And we should be encouraging basic science. You don't get involved in basic science if you think that it's going to make money. It doesn't make
Good
money,
point.
But it does create the ability for companies and for people to live better. And that's what we should be focused on.
Very good point. Let's talk about education, which has certainly been one of your strong suits as an educator yourself. What are some of the things that you've been working on in Congress to help on the education front? And again, what are some of the things that you think need to be done for the future, both for K through 12 as well as higher education?
I think we need to pass a 21st Century Elementary and Secondary Act bill that prioritizes the ability of our students to be in a system that supports them in the math, in the sciences, in workforce development as they age and move into the higher education system. It's so critical that we have the appropriate instructors, professionals, teachers, principals to provide that key role for young people as they achieve. And so my focus has always been, and partly because of, mostly I think, because of being a school board member and spending so much time in our schools and talking to teachers, every teacher wants to be valued for the role that they play in the classroom. And they want help. They want resources. They want to do better every single day with their students. And we need to make that possible. We need to have a professional accountability in the system that helps that. It's not negative. It's not undermining teachers. It's finding a way to first celebrate them, but more than that, to give them what they need to be successful with their students. And I think that we now have a system in place in a number of our schools that is nurturing in that way. I've always believed that evaluations are good for everybody. They're good for me. They're good for mm-hmm. my staff. They're good for everybody in business to have that, but it's a kind of buy-in system where everybody feels that they do better out of the process.
Yeah.
And that's been important, and that's an issue that I've been fighting for and working for some time now.
Thank you for sharing that. What about higher education and specifically making college more affordable. We've seen student loans and the cost of college just going through the roof and kids coming out in debt for, you know, decades. Yeah.
I often tell the story that when I graduated from Berkeley, I was fortunate enough in those days that it wasn't so difficult to afford a higher education, and especially in our university system, because the state invested in its people. It invested in students. And I knew as a student, and I think my friends knew, that somehow or other, we were not paying our full fare for our education. We knew that the state was contributing. It was contributing three quarters, as opposed to today, where it's contributing maybe not even quite a quarter to a student's education. But I also knew that by doing that and by working hard, by playing by the rules, that by getting the education that I felt would help realize my potential, that I would give back someday.
Right.
So, and I think that's a feeling that we want all students to have. Today, we actually have several bills that, when passed, would help young people with student loans. Part of it is keeping interest rates low. And the other thing is getting rid of some administrative fees that students and parents pay for taking out a loan, and making sure that when students want to pay down a loan, that the principal is affected, not just the interest rate on those loans.
What is the likelihood, given the current makeup of Congress, that those bills will get through, do you think?
Well, it's tough, and it's tough because we actually had to fight hard to be sure that student interest rates were not raised tremendously and would really have been even more impactful on students. We finally were able to come to some compromise on that, but I don't know why that is resisted as strongly as it is. There is a concern that we have to find ways of paying for that in ways that might actually hurt the students in other ways. So it's important to find a happy medium with that. We also, I think, know that universities and our colleges and actually we have a lot of for-profit schools that need to be looked at, because we shouldn't have universities constantly competing with one another, and that tends to raise rates as well. Nonprofits present a different kind of problem, and they present that particularly for some of our veterans, I think, when there isn't enough transparency in the system for what that student's fees are going for. And because our veterans particularly are paying for their college education from taxpayer-funded dollars, they should be transparent.
Let's talk about veterans and military family issues for a little bit. What are some of the things you've been able to achieve since you've been back there to help military members and their families and our veterans? And what else do you think needs to be done?
The GI Bill obviously was a tremendous accomplishment of the Congress, not the folks who just came in, but for those of us who served at the beginning of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Mm-hmm. That is so important, because our veterans and our serving members of the military, men and women, need to know how much we value their service, and that their ability to transition from the military to civilian life is not just critical to them and their family, it's critical to our economy.
Right.
Nothing is worse than having someone who served our country to be on the streets and to not have a job and not have a future. Cool. So that's primary. And I think we've done a good job at that. But I also think that there are many ways we can assist veterans in this transition. Moving from one strong culture to another is not easy. And many, many of our serving members of the military learn that, and sometimes don't have the support that they need to be able to make that a smooth transition for them.
And listeners, if you tuned in late, we are speaking with Congresswoman Susan Davis from the 53rd Congressional District today here on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Let's move on and talk about the economy now, including the deficit. You've mentioned that obviously there's always voices saying if we want to fund something new, we've got to figure out how to pay for it. What, in your view, should be done to reduce the deficit and strengthen the economy and also create jobs, particularly here in the San Diego and East County regions?
Creating jobs is very important. And one thing I would say is that it is true that we are concerned when we're looking for the kind of pay-fors that actually hurt our economy.
Right.
I think having it pay for is a good thing, actually. I mean, we can do that, but we don't want to almost take from Peter to pay Paul in this instance. We really have to be careful where those dollars are coming from. And I'm afraid that what we've seen in the past, particularly when it comes to some of the issues that people, you know, have been concerned about, is that a lot of the money for some very important funding issues may come out of people's health care. Yeah. It may come out of serving seniors. So that's where the pay for is critical. We should be focused on that. The problem is that we know we funded two wars, we funded a major tax break without paying for things. So when we're told, well, you have to find a pay for that, what is the critical issue that we're trying to address? And how can we look at that and know that there is a way to pay for it? It's just not hurting people in order to help others. And that's where I come in on this and the kind of balance we have to have. I think that one of the key moves and the key changes that this Congress could make when it comes back for lame duck, but more so in January, and I certainly hope to be part of that, is to pass immigration reform. Numbers show that we would raise our economy, raise wages, and lower the deficit if we pass immigration reform. And there's some really good basic reasons for why that would happen. But generally speaking, we would have people who are engaged in the economy today, but in the shadows, out there. Yeah. They would be paying into the Social Security system. They would feel comfortable bringing their best ideas to fruition.
Starting
new businesses. We make it hard on people today, and that would be a tremendous reform. And for those of us, for all of us here in the San Diego region, the changes would be enormous because we have many companies now that manufacture, that are engaged in energy, independent technologies and economies that would flourish if we would make that work for everyone. And I think that part of it is trying to help educate and bring our colleagues here to San Diego and show them what it means to be part of a border region. We can do better here. And we're really at the cutting edge of all this. And so I'm just hopeful that we can move forward with this issue because that will make a difference in our economy.
Yeah. I'm wondering what your views are on Social Security in terms of protecting Social Security versus cutting it, as many of the Republicans in Congress are saying needs to be done.
We need to continue to protect Social Security. We have many, many people who live on the edge. But I think we also can be commonsensical about this, and we can try and develop some new ideas and some old ideas that make some changes that into the future would make a difference. And I think we can do that very well without hurting people that are in the system today. We don't have to touch that. We can look to the future, but we also want to acknowledge Social Security is very, very important. And you can just think about what it would mean to young people if they had to provide greater care for their parents in their later years.
Right.
That's something that I think this country has embraced, and we need to embrace it as well, but we can do it in a way that we can address the issues. We're doing much better, actually, in healthcare and in Medicare because we've done some easy things to try and be sure that we're spending our dollars wisely. Same thing can be done in Social Security.
Now, you voted for the Affordable Care Act. Now that it's being rolled out, I'd like to know how you feel about the way it's working, what's working, if there's things that aren't. Do you see options for improving or changing that in the future?
We can always improve and change on just about anything. I think that's central. But getting started with seeing millions of people who were not insured today, whether they're insured even through Medi-Cal or they're insured through their own exchange system that they engage in, makes a huge difference. And when now that we're facing even possibility, I don't think it's going to happen here, but I think we have to know how to prepare for any kind of pandemic. Having people that are insured makes a real difference. And obviously preparing people for rather extraordinary ways of dealing with those issues. But I think when you talk to people about the Affordable Care Act, they see you know, there have been problems. Of course, there are going to be some issues and some problems. We have different ways of people engaging with their providers. Perhaps in some cases, there is a professional who they work with on some issues and a physician on another issue. We can do better. I think for women, particularly in women's health issues, but why this is so important is women are the main caregiver in our society.
Yeah.
And they're also the person who's out there being the breadwinner, really,
yeah,
for their family.
Speaking
so their health, which is a little more complicated in many ways, is very important. And we want to be sure that women have a place to go for their health care, and that some of the ways that the issues, such as even birth control,
yeah,
where for a young person paying a lot of money for birth control can be problematic. It can make a difference of a decision that they make about how they're going to just pay for that. And the fact that we're now trying to move ahead with birth control, but also with some basic tests that people can take to determine whether or not they need to have further tests, whether it's biopsies, whether it's for breast cancer, whatever that may be. A lot of that is now being provided. It's being provided as well for our seniors through the ACA. And there are many, many benefits that people see today. I think it would be very, very difficult for people to now, you know, if someone were to try and repeal that, for them to give that up. Generally, I think it's here to stay. We must do everything we can to find the problems and fix them.
And you've certainly gotten high marks through the years for your votes in support of women's issues from organizations that support women and children, for that matter, also, such as the Fair Pay Act. And I'm wondering if you'd like to comment about this divide we seem to see in Congress right now over women's issues, not only reproductive health, I understand you're pro-choice, but also things like the Fair Pay Act, where we're still fighting about whether or not something should be done about the fact that women are still earning 70 cents, 77 cents for every dollar that a man earns.
I was actually in the Education Committee, sitting in the committee, when Lilly Ledbetter came to testify before the committee about what had happened to her over many, many years, when she finally learned, because you could not go get that information, that she was being paid so much less than men who had her absolute same job.
Yeah.
And what we see today, we use 70 cents on the dollar. That tends to be for white women who earn 70 cents on the dollar. But for African American women, it's more like 66 cents, I believe. And for Latinas, more like 56 cents on the dollar. And just think about what they could do if they made that full dollar.
Yeah.
What that would mean in their lives if they could put that into childcare, if they could put that into their young person's education, buying more books, buying the kinds of equipment that's needed for kids today almost to just get through school. That would make a difference, because those women would shop at the very stores who are waiting for customers to walk through their doors. That would really help the economy. So when we talk about minimum wage, what we know is that the bulk of people on minimum, I think it's over 30% of minimum wage earners, are all women.
Mm-hmm.
If we can do better and raise those wages, all wages begin to rise as well. What's happening today, despite a good economy, 55 months of growth in the economy, we still have people who are not earning much more than they were 55 months ago.
Right. Certainly one of the drains on the economy, as you mentioned earlier, is that we've been at war for 10 years in Iraq, and now, once again, we're back to military conflict because of the ISIS terrorist threat that's occurring and the genocide that's been occurring in Iraq and Syria. I would like to get your views, as someone who's on the Armed Services Committee, about the U.S. handling of that. Are we doing enough, too much? What are your views about how the military crisis over there should be addressed?
Yeah, it's a tough balance, but I think we obviously have to move forward and do everything we can to, as the president has said, basically to degrade and destroy over time.
So you support the airstrikes?
I support the airstrikes. I also believe that we need to work with our international partners. Mm-hmm. We all probably agree in this country that we don't want to see a full-scale army and military go into another Middle Eastern country, mm-hmm. or anywhere for that matter. But I think people believe that our presence may have even contributed yeah. to some of the problems we see today. And I think you could follow that theory out in a number of ways. Mm-hmm. So it's smart to not put a full-scale armies on the ground.
So you would not support boots on the ground?
I think we have boots on the ground, and I think we have to be realistic. I think we need to have help and support. We need to train the people that are going to be on the ground. But we also have to work diplomatically. We have to work across every agency possible to try and impact this issue. We learned that lesson. Finally, we learned it in Iraq for a while. We've learned it in Afghanistan. It's made a difference. Governance matters. And you will never have people who want to fight for their country if they don't believe that their government is going to be there and support them and protect them. Right now, there are not people who live in those areas where ISIS is growing that believe in their own government. So ISIS fills a void for some people, despite the fact that it's a horrible, heinous organization that does terrible, terrible things.
There's also a humanitarian crisis here. Million and a half people have been displaced because of ISIS. Here in East County, we have a lot of Chaldeans and a lot of Kurds, other people from the Middle East, who've been trying to get Congress to support raising the caps on immigration from that part of the world to allow at least the persecuted minorities, the Christians, the Yazidis, some of these groups, some of them to be able to come here. Congress adjourned without taking action on that, but I'd like to know what your views are on that.
Congress adjourned not taking action on that and dealing with the authorization of use of military force.
ISIS. Big one.
I actually believe that Congress got out too early. I think that there were issues that we should have dealt with. We should have stayed mm-hmm. and we should have made sure that those issues were addressed before we left. But I think leadership wanted to move people out. And I think that was a real mistake that we will regret. However, I do think that when it comes to the Chaldean community and when it comes to making certain that we're listening to the fears of the community here in San Diego and in other places, we need to move forward. I'm supportive of lifting that cap. I think that it really behooves us as a moral nation to be doing what we can to help people out. I personally have enjoyed working with the Chaldean community. We actually have followed up on some meetings so that there's a better coordination and law enforcement here. I think law enforcement was certainly reaching out, but there are some really good ways to do that. And I think the community is engaged in that as well because we want people to feel safe. I think that they actually were uncomfortable with some of the what was happening and fearful as a community here. We really want to be sure that they know that they're safe.
Yeah, that's interesting. The El Cajon mayor, I know, said that if they can come here to tell them that they will be safe. That was what he said to a group of 2,000 or so Iraqi Chaldeans that were rallying for this in El Cajon.
So yes, no, it's very important. They're part of our community, and there's no reason in the world that they should feel targeted.
Yeah,
and we have to be sure that that doesn't happen.
I'd like to circle back to the economy and energy issues for just a little bit. I think it's very important with all of the things that are happening right now to ask your views about climate change and what needs to be done about that and what kind of energy policies that you support.
Well, I'm very pleased to see the city of San Diego, and I know the cities surrounding that are looking at what they can do and what their role is. And some of those goals that they've put forward are pretty ambitious. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody would say that we're not seeing climate change, although there are quite a few of my colleagues who actually are kind of deniers in this area. But I think we are facing differences in climate that are new to everyone. And some of that translates into some pretty horrific storms and
drought and wildfires,
disasters, really, weather disasters, that impact on families and certainly on their security and obviously their income. So I think that we need to address that. People are doing that in many different ways. I mean, some people are doing it with solar, whether it's on their home or they're buying into some of the solar systems.
What your thoughts are that exists, say, industrial scale solar or wind versus solar or other energy sources in the urban areas closer to where the power is used.
There are upsides and downsides for all of that. I think nothing is perfect. Nothing is going to be 100%. There's something to be said for solar farms, although there are some impacts for that. But on the other hand, the cost of people individually having solar apparatus on their roof, they may actually do better by buying into, you know, more of the solar industry in different ways. I mean, and I think people just have to look at that. It's individual. Some of us, I just want to have solar panels because we think we're helping out and we really want to have our footprint be smaller. But we know that there are also issues about how energy rates are developed, and there's some change now coming about to try and look at that. And I think that San Diego Gas and Electric, I know, is engaged in that process. And
yes,
I've had a chance to meet with them and discuss that. And I think we all need to just educate ourselves about what is the best for our family. How can we move forward? What can we do to make a change? Do we want an electric car? You know, is that a good investment for us? Because all of this adds up. But everybody, most people do frequent stores, grocery establishments, work in a business. And so I think every one of those establishments plays a role. And we need to speak out, you know, let our voice be heard. If we see that things aren't being recycled, you know, go ask, you know, can we do better? So we all have to be part of that. And I think that's partly what the city plans are all about as well.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about yourself or your campaign or your work in Congress?
I view my work in Congress as a way to help people. I started out in my professional career as a social worker. And this is, for me, it's an extension of that also. Being a mom, of being a military spouse, our office works with many, many people across a broad spectrum of issues. We get about 1,000 pieces of mail a week.
Wow.
But over the course of a year, annually, we solve, of the 1,000 key cases, you know, higher cases that we deal with, we solve about 80% of those to the full benefit of the constituent.
That's a pretty impressive casework record.
We do that with the great work of staff in the office. It's case management. It's tedious sometimes. You have to be persistent. You have to go nag. You have to do all kinds of things. And I play a role with that as well. I was really pleased to meet at the recent Oktoberfest in La Mesa a gentleman who we were able to keep in his home. So it was not foreclosed. Wow. And the only way he was able to realize that was because the work that was done in my office. Happened to be a call that I had been involved in as well, but most of that came through the office. And when you meet someone like that and you feel that you changed their life, there also was another woman there who we helped actually make sense with one of her healthcare providers so that she could get a surgery that was badly needed, but that they were kind of pushing her off.
Wow.
So call us. That's what we're there for. We're there for our constituents. I always will be. To me, that's the best part of this job.
Very good. Can we just end by having you let folks know with reapportionment where your district is now, what communities it includes, Susan?
Well, the communities of East County that it includes primarily, if we move from Sierra Mesa, the Allied Gardens area, Del Cerro, and parts of the what I call Patrick Henry, Jackson into San Carlos. We're part of San Carlos. It includes La Mesa and the western half of El Cajon, the Helix area. And then we actually are part of the south too. So if you almost think of, you know, the top of a seven going all the way through to El Cajon and then coming down into the South County area. So Otay Ranch and Bonita and the eastern portion of Chula Vista, in addition to the mid-city of San Diego, including Balboa Park.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today, Congresswoman, on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you. Good to be with you. Thanks.